I'm Chris Rebolo for California Healthline. Dr. Jack Lewin is CEO of the California Medical Association, an organization representing more than 30,000 physicians in the Golden State. In a recent interview, Lewin answered questions about the governor's healthcare agenda, upcoming healthcare mergers, and physicians' own sense of the future of medicine. First question, the big story in California healthcare right now is the 5% cut in the Medi-Cal payments that went into effect the new year.
Yes.
The LA Times estimates that nearly 3.3 million patients will be affected in the state. As I understand, payments for a routine office visit have dropped from $24 to $22.80.
Yeah. We were before the cuts were implemented, California was 50th out of 50 states in the lowest payments to the nation. So, here we add an insult to injury, and obviously it will have a negative impact on access. There'd be nobody to work the patients up, to diagnose them, and we already, as it is, 50% of the physicians have had to drop participation in Medi-Cal fee-for-service because it's a goodwill program. And many will take the patients, but not submit a bill. It's a waste of their time.
So the California Medical Association, are you taking specific action?
We're taking action to introduce legislation next week that will reverse these cuts. The governor claims he's implementing the cuts because it's the law. We would be hopeful that when the budget is announced, that we see a reversal, but we don't see any sign of that. So we will take action in the legislature. There's going to be overwhelming support there to reverse the cuts. Then the governor will have to decide whether he wants to publicly veto the bill.
Now, speaking of budgets, there has been an announcement that the governor is going to put more money into Medi-Cal and into healthy families to increase enrollment. What's your take on that?
Well, that's a nice gesture. We would support increasing enrollment. It'd be nicer if there were more doctors available to take care of the patients after they get enrolled. But we think that's a nice move. The rest of the money that's in the budget is actually less than was in last year, and it's pretty much mandatory increases as the population goes up. We have to deal with the rising costs of healthcare in general. And, the governor isn't putting any cuts out for hospitals or for pharmaceutical companies or for health plans in this thing. It's all aimed at doctors. But the eligibility decision is something we welcome as a nice gesture. What the governor doesn't say so far is more important than what he is saying. What he doesn't say is that he's going to be a champion of expanding access to care for 900,000 kids who need insurance in this state. He doesn't say that having 7 million uninsured people and 3 million non-citizens without health care is a crisis in the emergency room that needs to have the focused attention of the state of California to protect the health care system for everybody, rich or poor. He doesn't mention that for $1.7 million, the Senate Office of Research says we could create a new public health agency, which we once had until 1971. We were the premier public health leader in the world up until then, when Governor Reagan eliminated the public health department. Today, we are in disarray in public health and could not handle well a bioterrorism event or a pandemic. Our state laboratory is in disarray. Fixing the public health system, again, the budget estimators believe could be done for $1.7 million. You just sort of create a new organization and move the public health people out of the Medi-Cal agency, the DHS, which would probably draw down as much as $100 million over the next 3 years in federal funds from Homeland Security and the CDC that we're not drawing today. Now, think about it this way. We spend $35 million an hour on Medi-Cal. So 1.7 million to create this new department, is just a few minutes of Medi-Cal spending to protect the public health of every Californian in a disaster. Now, the governor talked about building it, but apparently he's not building anything in healthcare or public health. So let's not build it is apparently the message here. So we'd like to turn that around. We think that this governor could have a healthcare legacy, and we think it could be in public health. We think it could be in access to care, particularly for children, and we think it could be in fixing the horrendous problems in the healthcare workforce with nurses and physician shortages and other healthcare worker shortages through the University of California and our university system. Healthcare is the seventh largest industry in the state, and building jobs in healthcare, which are good jobs, would be a very important economic development strategy. So hopefully, in the next few years, Governor Schwarzenegger will decide that healthcare is as important as the public considers it to be, and he will work to develop a legacy there, and we look forward to working with him.
You mentioned the Department of Public Health. That's a good lead into my next question. There is a bill winding its way through the state legislature that would create a separate Department of Public Health, separating
right.
it from the Department of Health Services.
Yes.
So your organization is going on record as supporting
that
effort?
We're strongly supportive. We think it's essential. Healthcare is important, but also many of the gains in longevity and life expectancy that have happened, the more than 35 years of life expectancy gain in the last century, the majority of that gain is from public health infrastructure changes. And we cannot, California was once the greatest of all geographies with respect to its public health expertise and excellence. And we are now not even on the, honorable mention list. We're in disarray.
So what's the benefit of removing that public health piece out of the current Department of Health Services?
We have very good people in the Department of Health Services, Secretary Bel Shea as the secretary, Sandra Shuri. I mean, we have a terrific team of people there. The governor's made some good appointments. And I think public health is important to them. But let's face it, with the Medi-Cal program is everything that they spend money on. That program just dwarfs anything we do in public health. And public health is always underfunded and undervalued until we have a crisis. In 1971, when we eliminated California's absolutely historic and excellent Department of Public Health, since then there's been nothing but a decline in public health in the state. A little blip of interest occurred in 1982 when the HIV epidemic scared the daylights out of Californians and a bunch of new public health dollars were temporarily infused. But until we have millions of Californians dying in a bioterrorism or a pandemic, we'll sit with blinders on as a state. For a tiny amount of money, budget dust, we could reestablish excellence in public health. And this governor needs to do that because it's part of his own historic interest in health and wellness and health promotion. So I hope he'll get some advice that will help him lead that way. Governments never like to change the status quo. So the fact that public health is sort of embedded in the Medi-Cal agency, it's unlikely to get pulled out by internal action inside government. It's going to take some leadership at the governor's level. But the legislature is certainly going to put it on the table. The Little Hoover Commission recommended with great data, a distinct and separate Department of Public Health. The RAND Corporation, this is all in the last 3 years. The RAND Corporation did a public health review in California and recommended a separate and independent Department of Public Health with reporting as a cabinet-level entity to the governor. And there are many other similar kinds of analyses. All the public health officers in the state recommend it. So one of the greatest schools of public health in the world is UC Berkeley, but it's been greatly diminished over the years by virtue of the fact that the public health infrastructure on the government side has been reduced.
Let's talk about another issue that Governor Schwarzenegger brought up during his State of the State address. He called on Congress to allow states to re-import prescription drugs from Canada and other countries. What's your take on that?
We applaud that kind of advocacy by the governor, and we also applaud the governor in terms of trying to push the CareRx program, where he would negotiate voluntary reductions for uninsured people of drug costs, since uninsured persons pay the highest prices for drugs of any Californians. And considering that we have 7 million of them and 3 million non-citizens, doing some kind of mass purchasing for 10 million people could result in very significant cost reductions for these individuals at risk. So the governor hasn't mentioned much about the CareRx program this year. It became a partisan issue and didn't get out of the legislature, didn't move. But it did get the support of the Senate Health Committee Chair, Deborah Ortiz, and the California Medical Association. So we hope that he will push that advocacy at the federal level, but also come back with another year of the CareRx program. We think that's a good idea.
Do you think those voluntary discounts will work? I mean, there was Prop 78, Prop 79. There were a lot of folks who said, look, the drug companies aren't going to go for voluntary reductions. You need to put a hammer to make them do it.
The problem is that the hammer doesn't really work either. I mean, you need a national hammer if you're going to have a hammer. A state hammer isn't going to be that effective. So that's why I think the governor's push for national advocacy makes sense. But a voluntary program at the state level could undoubtedly achieve 40% discounts for uninsured people. And that would be a very good thing to do until the national hammer is actually implemented.
Let's talk about health insurance mergers. In 2004, Anthem WellPoint merged, creating the nation's largest insurer. Now United Health Group, second largest insurer in the country, and Pacific Care Health Systems, which is one of California's largest insurers, are planning to merge. What's your any opinion on these mergers?
Well, both of these mergers have occurred in an environment in California where there really isn't a whole lot of change in terms of coverage overlap, because Anthem doesn't have a business in California and United doesn't have a business in California. So our concern has been focused mainly on the intention of the for-profit corporate shareholders in both the parent companies that will likely want to vampirize California, that is to pull out money from our state where we're more efficient in healthcare, to increase the profitability of their programs. Specifically, there's kind of an unfortunate term called the medical loss ratio, which relates to how much money as a percent of insurance premium a company spends on healthcare. So whatever the company spends on healthcare, the insurance terms, they call it the medical loss. We call it healthcare. At any rate, the medical loss ratio for, let's say, United Healthcare is around 77 or 78% nationally, whereas PacifiCare, it's about 85%. What that means is PacifiCare spends more of the premium dollar on healthcare than the parent company United. United takes more money out for profit, and we really don't want to see United come in here and, as I said before, vampirize PacifiCare and pull money out for higher levels of profit, which they've been getting away with across the country elsewhere. Similar concern with Anthem WellPoint. So we're watching carefully to make sure that California's current and fragile healthcare environment is protected in the face of these mergers. We believe Health Net is certainly vulnerable to be acquired by somebody in the very near future. And one doesn't know what will happen in the long run with Blue Shield. So we know that Kaiser Permanente is going to be here. They're secure in the long run, and we assume that WellPoint will be. But we'd like to make sure that Californians still have choice and competition and that physicians aren't somehow relegated to the role of having no influence against these huge corporate entities.
Well, do you think these mergers affect physicians' negotiating power regarding payment? After all, you know, there are fewer players in the market.
Absolutely they will. I mean, that's the way the market can become more tyrannical. And in fact, you'd have environments, and you do already have environments like San Luis Obispo, where there's no choice at all. You've got one health plan, basically, and maybe a separate Medi-Cal program, but you basically have one health plan dominating the whole market. So it's a take-it-or-leave-it deal for doctors. And more doctors are tearing up their contracts entirely because they'll be driven to bankruptcy by the health plans. So all they want to do is maximize profits. So we really have great concerns about that, and we think that for the middle-class American and lower-income Americans, it's very likely that the current marketplace will take us to a point in the near future that citizens no longer have access to a physician.
So is there any specific action that the California Medical Association can, will take, What can you do about this?
Many Californians aren't aware of it, but in the year 2000, we filed a classic and historic lawsuit, a civil fraud and racketeering lawsuit, or RICO, against the collective for-profit insurers of America. And we demonstrated that these companies had deliberately done things like automatically underpay physicians, downcode physicians, deny care that was supposedly provided, not have adequate networks of doctors to even be able to deliver the care in many communities, and a variety of behaviors that were abusive and inappropriate. I might add that these lawsuits were considered cavalier when filed. They are now the largest class action lawsuits in the U.S. history, with 800,000 physicians as plaintiffs and 19 state medical societies as plaintiffs. In the RICO lawsuits, we've sought two basic kinds of relief, and it's not for money, it's injunctive relief. One, that medical necessity decisions be made by doctors on behalf of patients, that the presumption is that rather than the doctor having to prove that the care is necessary to the health plan on some scientific basis, that the health plan rather has to prove it is not necessary on some scientific basis. That's a huge step forward for patients. And the second is that health plans must be transparent in their claims processing and that they must be consistent and pay fairly and reasonably. Now, Anthem, WellPoint, Humana, HealthNet, Prudential, Cigna, Aetna have already settled these lawsuits and accommodated the changes required. The only major, a small plan in the East, Coventry, is about to settle, meaning that the only two plans left among the for-profit national plans will be United Healthcare and PacifiCare. And they will have to go to trial on this basis soon. So we are doing things to try to level the playing field. What we'd really like to see is health plans working closer with doctors in partnership on improving quality and patient safety. But, you know, unfortunately, in the for-profit sense, the shareholders aren't really interested in that. They're interested in maximizing the return on investment. And this is a tough industry, considering people's lives are at stake.
So concerning this last merger that's up for grabs, the lawsuit that
all the others have signed on to.
So if they sign on to it, would that prevent the merger, or would they have to do the right thing?
It would certainly make United and PacifiCare more responsible players and more consistent with the rest of the marketplace here.
So is there any action that you can take to actually block the merger?
We have tried, and it's hard to do that. And the reason is that there's no geographic overlap in California between United and PacifiCare. So, you know, in terms of how the antitrust entities and the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission look at this, if there's no overlap of the two companies in the state, then they look at it as how can this be denied on the basis of how corporate mergers occur in every industry across the nation. Now, if the companies were here competing with each other and their consolidation would further consolidate the power of one over the patient and the doctor, we might have had a chance, but we don't in this case.
All right. Dr. Lewin, let's back up for a second, just sort of looking forward to 2006, now that we're in the early part of the year. As far as the California Medical Association, in addition to anything that you've already mentioned, are there any other issues that are high on your agenda?
Yes. We obviously need to continue to push hard for universal access and coverage for all the uninsured. We cannot bury our heads in the sand. We need a solution, and one that is financially effective and politically viable. And so that's going to be a huge agenda for us. We'd like to move forward with children's insurance access on a universal basis. We'd like to get agricultural workers covered, at least with prevention and primary care and prenatal care and well child care, because not attending to these things means we all spend more taxpayer dollars to deal with unnecessary emergency room visits and hospitalizations. We need to bolster the viability of the emergency and on-call system for California, where we take everybody, whether they can pay or not, and having 10 million people that don't pay their bills just creates non-viability. And we've lost many emergency rooms, more than 50 in the last decade. We cannot continue to see this particular part of the healthcare system, which is, for all of us, important as a front door We can't see this be destabilized.
You're in Sacramento. A lot of this, what you're talking about, involves the legislature, involves government. What's the current climate? Do you think that it's, quote, positive for healthcare issues?
You know, the public obviously puts healthcare always in the top three concerns and priorities. And I do not believe that elected officials, either in California or in Washington, D.C., have really decided to consider health care as a top priority. Look at what's going on in Washington. Congress has cut doctors in Medicare 4.4%, while they gave the for-profit HMO industry a 6% increase. They gave hospitals nearly 5%. They've cut the doctors, the people who take care of the patients. And what that means is fewer patients will get the care that they need, and they think that's going to be a budget that's going to save money. It's not very nice to people, but they think it's going to save money. The result is it's going to send more and more fragile senior citizens into the emergency room as their medical home and into the hospital as their secondary place of residence. So my sense is that we need a whole lot of enlightenment, both at the state and the national level, about the importance of healthcare. And we need to work on actually changing the system, streamlining the system, making it more efficient, more effective, improving quality, getting the diagnosis right the first time, the treatment plan right the first time, in which case we will start to see costs go down and health status go up.
Final question. I'm assuming you have your pulse on the medical community in California. Doctors, are they discouraged? Is it harder to be a doctor in California? Is it less rewarding?
Let me tell you this startling statistic. Surveying a large majority of our membership, 60% of California Medical Association physician members would not recommend to their children that they go into medicine. It's the first generation in the history that we ever know of where doctors didn't want their kids to be doctors. Doctors no longer want their kids to be doctors. They don't think it will be a reasonable way to raise a family in the future. That's an enormous change in attitude, and it's a scary one. We see in the medical schools across California very few students in their medical school and residency training who expect to go into primary care, that is, family practice, pediatrics, internal medicine, and even obstetrics and gynecology is considered to be a non-viable area. And while this is happening, the debt that students have to incur is approaching $200,000 at the end of their medical school. So you come out of school in your 30s, you've lost over a decade of income earning potential with a huge debt into a profession where Congress doesn't value what you do, the state of California doesn't value what you do, and malpractice attorneys would like to sue you every time you do a great job, but somehow somebody still dies. And it's not a fun time to be a doctor, even though the science part of medicine is more exciting than at any time in history. It's just medicine has become an endangered profession.
I'm Chris Rebelow for California Healthline.